how do we make a difference with that, and how do we entrain that circadian rhythm?
This week on Braving the Journey, I have Molly McLaughlin from Sleep is a Skill. She shares with us everything about sleep, about rhythms of life, what we need to do and don't. Man, sleep is such a powerful thing that we all have a tendency to struggle with everything that goes on in our culture and with COVID and everything happening. So Molly does an amazing job shedding some light on this and helping give us some just really helpful information. So let's check it out. All right. Well, hey, Molly, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to just be on the show with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Even before hitting record, this has been a great conversation. So I'm excited for more.
I know. I feel like you have a lot to teach me in just all different aspects of life. And so,
I feel like it's mutual.
So you are in the world of sleep, sleep specialist, sleep, you know, that is your world. But I kind of want you to just share with us, like, how did you even get there? You know, like what brought you to the space of going, I want to become an expert on the sleep, and not only that, but begin to help others with it too?
Yeah, great question, because it's really the whole meat of the company Sleep is a Skill, is because I created it to really solve my own problem with sleep. And what my story is that for a big chunk of my adult life, I had a lot of labels in the area of sleep, that I was a night owl. I'm not a good sleeper, a long line of bad sleepers. How it is for us, whatever. And lots of narratives, and didn't think too much of it until it started getting more, a bit more extreme, more difficult to handle. If I had to get up early at certain times, I was living in the middle of Manhattan, burning the candle at both ends as an entrepreneur. And it started to become a bit more of a challenge. And I was starting to get sick more and more. I got shingles. I had the beginnings of an ulcer. You know, a lot of stress was there. And the symptomology was really coming out around difficulties with sleep. However, I still wasn't, you know, being stubborn, or, you know, didn't think it was too much of a problem. And it was not until I went through a period of insomnia while traveling internationally, dealing with jet lag, a lot of uncertainty with my business. And from that place, just what ended up happening was my first real encounter of what life is like without countable sleep. Yeah. And from that place, it was really a scary time in my life, because I just did not know, is this how it's going to be for me now? is this like my new future?
Yeah.
And so really when it hit the kind of like draw a line in the sand moment was when I ended up going to the doctors, because I'd spent so many night after night of just not, like, sleep was not coming to me, and it was maddening. And I went to the doctors and they didn't know what to do with me. And, you know, we had Google Translate to, quickly shuffled out with then a prescription for their version of Ambien. This was in Croatia. And from that moment, it was like, all right, I got to figure this out. But I had the elements of kind of shame and embarrassment. This is something that it seems like it should be possible for everyone. And it wasn't for me in that moment. So everything kind of changed there.
Yeah. What do you think it is about? Just something in our human nature when like sleep is something that like we're designed to do. And yet when we aren't able to like do it correctly, like we kind of move towards this place of like, I failed, or I don't know how to do this, or like, you know, and I don't, versus just being like, okay, going, hey, I struggle with this and I need help. I think there's something that's interesting, I think, in us, that we have to sometimes go to the very depths of like not sleeping at all for nights on end before we realize like we need help with it or something, you know?
Oh yeah. It was my kind of rock bottom kind of had me finally, in order to bring back not only homeostasis to this area, but actually optimize my sleep to levels that I certainly hadn't experienced before any of this, was what it really took was kind of turning my life upside down and really dealing with things that weren't working, both in my life and as well as adding in some of the things that I learned around chronobiology, which is really the science of time, and circadian rhythm optimization, and really just bringing about habits, because so much of my company, it's really based on the intersection of technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Okay. And so by bringing those, you know, kind of elements into the mix, really helped to turn upside down my relationship to what it would take to get great sleep. And I call it like the Trojan horse effect, because in order, you know, I'm going out at to fix this one problem of perceived of, okay, I'm not sleeping. But of course, in order to do that, I had to really up level just about every other area of my life in order to have that kind of come back to the basics. So yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's so many different elements that go into sleep that, you know, it's not just like, oh, I'm not sleeping well. It's like, you know, even I look at my own personal life right now. I'm like, I'm having some severe back pain that's causing me not to sleep super well. And so I'm having to deal with that, kind of walking through that scenario of like, what is it? Going to doctors, trying to get, you know, solutions to it, because I know it's affecting, you know, where, how I sleep. How do you have any stats on just kind of the number of people in like the US or worldwide that really struggle with kind of, you know, a sleep kind of deprivation or struggle in that?
Yeah. So, and great question, particularly now in, you know, 2020 and beyond, when what we're dealing with the pandemic. So even prior to the pandemic, then we were talking about, you know, really a third of our population, at the very least, these are meager estimates, around, you know, having difficulty, falling asleep, staying asleep. But then even beyond that, we're talking about just a progressive lowering of total sleep amounts. So kind of across the board. So now we're looking at much part of the average being on the high end of the sixes range. So, you know, 6 hours and 45 minutes is some of these averages that are just really insufficient for what we understand to be important for sleep. And of course, you can't put like a, you must have a certain number, total amount of sleep, but it's drastically different than it used to be even 100 years ago. You know, and certainly before Edison, with the invention of the light bulb, where a lot of these things shifted, because, and the reason I mentioned that is that that really changed our ability to augment our days in ways that now we could live on 24-hour schedules, where prior to that, we were much more tethered to these rhythms of nature, of, you know, sunrise and sunset. Sun we used to set, and then beyond maybe like a bonfire or something, you were largely going to be going to bed shortly in alignment with that. Another interesting stat on the stats topic is that in 2016, the World Health Organization basically quantified, or, you know, part of their calculation was that the average person in the West, in America, was spending over 90% of their days inside. And why that's important, and of course, as we're looking at the pandemic, you know, that was 2016, we could imagine that that number is likely higher. Why that's important is that one of the biggest things we do at Sleep as a Skill is something known as circadian rhythm entrainment. And to entrain your circadian rhythm, which again is that 24-hour rhythm where we're diurnal creatures meant to be active during the day and at rest at night, part of the two of the most important things are light and temperature. Now, when we are inside a huge portion of our days, you know, really the majority of our days, then what we're missing and we're no longer connected to are those two key signs that used to keep that schedule intact. And now that that is no longer present, so we have AC, air condition, you know, temperature controlled space, so we don't have that variability with, because our body temperature has a circadian element to it, as well as the light. It has been for the longest time the most, one of the most powerful drivers of our circadian rhythm, because our eyes are connected with the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is known as the master clock of our brain. That really keeps everything on time. And because those eyes are so connected to it, that's like been the key. So if you were sleeping and living outside, as opposed to how we are now, you, that would be your alarm, was really, okay, the sun is rising. And then when the sun rises, the temperature gets warmer. So those two things together would act as like your own natural coffee. And that was kind of what it would do, is tell your body, okay, so now it's, we need to cease the, you know, amount of the production of melatonin, and we need to shift over into the production of cortisol, which is like, again, our, that natural coffee. So without those cues, now we're having to, that's why I make the argument that today in our modern society, sleep has become a skill set, because we actually have to think about these things, whereas before they would have been just, it would have been natural.
Natural. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's interesting. You know, and it's funny, just even thinking about that, like, you know, I moved from Idaho to Hawaii 7 years ago, and there's a beauty about Hawaii is there's really no nightlife. So if you're like coming to Maui, there's not a great nightlife on Maui, but people do operate here on the, when the sun's up, you're up, and when the sun's down, you rest.
Yes.
And it's kind of culturally, you just kind of see it here, you know, everybody's up early, the wind's not out. It's the nice beginning part of the morning. So everyone's out and about early, you know, and sometimes I take that for granted, but I realize how much that actually, you know, when we have people visit us, a lot of times they're like, man, I sleep so good here. And I don't, you know, I think it's because they play hard, they're in the sun, but they, you know, I think there's a natural rhythm that they pick up here too. And so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those things all work really, they're interconnected. And then, you know, being out in the ocean is one of the fantastic element for our sleep, natural magnesium, in the sea salt, and then the grounding effect that you are out in the sand with the sun, all of that stuff is going to really help. And also the, thermoregulation element of being in that cold water, you know, it's colder than our body temperature, all can really, really help with our sleep as well. So you got a good system over there.
So I live in a good place is what you're talking
about.
Yes,
pretty much.
Perfect. I want you to kind of come back to the circadian rhythm. I was kind of reading some stuff on your site, but you were talking about like three key daily time shifts, and there was kind of light, meal, and movement. I want you, can you share more with us, like, kind of just about this, like everything you were just kind of talking about, but more like, what does that mean? Like, what is the meals have to do with our rhythm? Like, you know, that almost brings me to a whole nother question of like intermittent fasting and sleeping. Like, I kind of want to go there.
They go together.
I'm curious about that, but yeah.
Sure.
So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's super interesting. I mean, I think it's fascinating, this whole area of, because again, where I had been using myself as that example of kind of the upside down living, it was almost like I created shift working for myself of, you know, I was active at the nights at asleep during the days. So that, for one thing, for shift workers, that's been labeled by the World Health Organization as a possible carcinogenic. So we know that living off of the rhythms of nature seems to be detrimental to our health. So how do we make a difference with that? And how do we entrain that circadian rhythm? Because it can, it exists on a spectrum. It can either be weak or strong, our circadian rhythm. And for most of us in the West, I would make the argument that most of us are just we have a weak circadian rhythm just as a facet of our environment. So to answer your question about all these other cues, they're known as time givers to the body. And there's a totem pole kind of the elements of importance for each one, but they're all really have a say in our functioning of our body. So one, like we talked about that light, then of course linked with light is darkness. So those two are really important to kind of hack if we're looking to improve our sleep, really seeking out darkness. Like you said, not really, you know, socially it's helpful if we're not having to fight off the drinking and the nightlife and all that stuff that can happen. So instead we can actually help calm down the body. But then underneath that totem pole is temperature, and nestled underneath temperature, what are all the things that we can do that can impact our body's temperature? One is eating as taxing or stress on the body. So it takes a lot in order to digest. All this blood flow has to go to your stomach in order to do it. So if you're eating later, and we're even talking like a couple hours before bed. So some of the things of like, okay, stop eating around 2 hours before bed. What evidence is pointing to that is really for many people still insufficient, and that you have to actually push it back even earlier, which is a big behavioral change for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'll have a lot of people stopping even just to begin chesting out, stopping around 4 hours before bed, which is a big difference for a lot of people. But what's so cool is the difference that they get to see in their stats as it relates to their body temperature going down, their heart rate going down, their HRV improving, their respiratory rate improving. So lots of differences just for that one variable. So that leads us to that conversation of intermittent fasting. So one of the things that we can talk about with sleep is something known as circadian rhythm intermittent fasting.
Okay.
Fancy series of words to really just mean that we're looking to eat within sunrise and sunset. Granted, I know there's an asterisk for there's different people have some clients in Sweden or Alaska, and there's certain periods where they have, you know, it's not so organized, the sunrise and sunset element. But barring that conversation, what would really stand as more of a standard sunrise and sunset, that's really what we're looking to eat within. There's an app, Zero, that can be helpful for this, that can actually geotag you where you are and kind of gamify this process and, you know, kind of help see, oh, you ate outside of, you know, sunset like five times this week. Let's, you know, do better next week.
Let's work on that.
Yeah, exactly. So all of that kind of, that's one big behavioral change element. Also, the food type can impact the quality of your sleep, because if you're someone that finds that you're waking up a lot throughout the night, at certain points in the night, you know, around 3-4 sort of time zone, depending on your bedtime, awake time, but just for the averages, looking at blood sugar regulation can be one. Cause sometimes either, you know, kind of high levels of glucose, but also really commonly is like the low levels of glucose. And when hitting that, then the body needing to really produce cortisol and adrenaline to deal with that kind of crash. And then that can often wake us up. So that type and timing can become important. So I'll have a lot of clients wearing continuous glucose monitors, so we can get up under those, you know, kind of time givers. And so that's one. And then the other one is movement timing. And that one, we really, really encourage people to move, to exercise, because that can make a big difference with sleep quality, but also the levels that you're actually reaching for heart rate and the arc of your heart rate throughout the night, as well as it's really helpful for thermoregulation. So we want to absolutely encourage working out. But of course, then there's certain some things that we kind of just as a facet of our society might forget. So I'll have certain clients that might, when they get out of work or whenever is available for the other day, they're going to go work out in like a really blue lit gym at whatever, 8 PM, that sort of stuff. All of that's raising up our body temperature and our heart rate. So ideally we want to kind of just shuffle a bit of the timeline of when we are working out. And
What is the ideal timeline for, I mean, like movement, crucial kind of all day, but like as far as like a, if you were going to go like, I struggle with sleep, but I really like to work out, is there an ideal time for like a hard workout?
Yeah, great question. So, and it does seem to be bio-individual for different people, but it's certainly, but the framework that we can operate in is what would have made sense back in kind of hunter-gatherer days. And certainly for one, within that sunrise, sunset, that would be the only time that would really make sense, because you wouldn't be running and shooting bears, certainly not shooting, even just like bows. You know, during the, you know, during the, while it's totally dark, it just wouldn't have happened. So we're trying to align with what we've done for really thousands and thousands of years, versus something that's our new way of interacting has only been for the past couple hundred years. So that's in the blip of, you know, human history. So when we come back to that, it's okay. So testing some of these things out to see what can work for us, as far as a harder workout, but all throughout the day too, we want to be getting movement. Because that one of the things we see in our sleep is that it can be a really nice mirror of how we are during the day, tends to be how we are in the nights, and relating to things like how we're breathing. So the respiratory rate can be a big area there. So I have some clients that are really, you know, dealing with anxiety, and at different points, the pandemic was a fantastic example for many, that during that their heart rate went up, and then also their respiratory rate went up, meaning that they're needing to breathe more throughout the night in order. And so when you wake up in the morning after all of that activity, it's much, you're going to feel more tired and drained versus the person that has that really calm or relaxed parasympathetic breath. So that's something we can even train. There's lots of little hacks for that. Like mouth taping is a interesting one while sleeping.
You throw out this like, hey, just tape your mouth shut, guys, while you go to bed. That's what I got. So you kind of threw that and just kept going for a second.
I know. Just slide that out. Exactly. Yeah.
What is mouth taping?
Mouth taping is great. Yeah. So mouth taping can be something to absolutely experiment with, where you can go on Amazon, not, you know, $15, something along those lines, get a stack of kind of mouth taping, you know, okay. and put it on. And then throughout the night, what that does is help train us to breathe through our nose. And that tends to really help make a difference with a number of things. It can kind of help support few different issues. One, if you're a snorer, that can help minimize some of the snoring. Snoring is a big deal for sleep quality, and it can, for many people, can be a sign of either sleep apnea or obstructive breathing. So that can help that. But even if you're not a snorer, and you're just finding that you're waking up in the morning and your mouth is a little dry, you know, just you're not feeling rested in the same way you could, that can be a good thing to test with. So I have people at least try that for 14 days. It really can help if you have some sort of sleep tracker so you can see the actual numbers. So what I tend to see with people when it's some are more dramatic than others, but for some of the more dramatic cases, we'll see heart rate going down, HRV, which is a great metric to kind of, in this conversation, will often improve, as well as respiratory rate going down. So those are some of the things you can do to make a difference with that. It can take, I would say, about like on average a week or so to kind of get used to it, because you are retraining this way of breathing. Right. But we also want to practice that during the day, which can seem like such a soft skill, but it can be really, really helpful for managing also just the levels of stress that we're under, because, you know, I'll have people do cortisol tests throughout the day, and many people are dealing with very, you know, a dysfunctional level of cortisol. So getting that breathing under control, even just from a biomechanics perspective, sitting all day is constricting the breathing. So I'm talking to you on a standing desk, like finding different ways to get ourselves, you know, kind of as much in alignment of how we would have lived in the past in a 21st century environment.
Right. Okay. So don't put duct tape across your mouth is what you're telling me. that's where I still went with. No, but,
yes, it's okay. It's a lot. Yeah.
There is so much. And I, you know, I think, you know, the more that you keep sharing, the more I'm like, man, sleep really has to do with so much of the underlying health throughout your day. You know, it's like kind of like how we eat, how we breathe, how we're active, how our stress levels are. All of that stuff adds up into sleep. So I will only imagine, like, your field, it's not this like, oh, yep, do this, and you sleep better. But there's so much underlying that you are working towards of discovering with people and then going, okay, now I want to, you know, take you from here. Talk to me about, okay, somebody's listening to this podcast right now. They're aware. They're able to go, man, I struggle with sleep. I know I do. It's something my whole life I've just told myself that that's just how I am. I'm a bad sleeper. And they get a second to talk for you to go, here's my couple step advice to begin to start working towards a better, healthy sleep. What would it be? And I know everybody's so unique and different. That's a struggle to answer the question. You know, it's like, but just kind of, if you had to generalize it to people, I think like, here's a couple tips that you would do to begin to move towards a kind of a healthier sleeping pattern.
Yeah. So one, I would have people really take on from the beginning where they're coming from, the context that they're living in around it, is that sleep is a skill. So the reason I say that and why that can be helpful is if we're relating to it like that, it's when we're approaching any sort of skill that we're not having success in. You know, I want to learn to play the piano. So we start and get a teacher. We start at 101 or whatever. We just begin to learn. Yeah. And we have it that, okay, it's a blank canvas. So let's start at the beginning. And so with that, we don't have it that there's anything innate. We just have a lot to learn. And so, and certainly that was what happened for me. I had no clue that the time I was eating, you know, my bag of popcorn and my glass of wine and watching Netflix and all that, I had no idea that some of these things were really impacting the quality of my sleep. So just one, taking on really shedding some of those labels, because unfortunately when we keep those around, we tend to, from a psychological perspective, just live into that. So one, shifting that we're coming from nothing and that this is a skill set and that there's everything to learn and we can absolutely have a new future. So really remembering that it's not just like, oh, well, maybe I can grab an extra 15 minutes a night or, you know, just some piddly uninspiring thing. So standing in that, and then from there, Then one, I would have people, I would have them really look at almost kind of forget the nights in some ways, if that makes sense. Like, you know, from the time you're in bed, kind of just practicing letting go, surrendering, kind of like, you know, with, you got the surfboard in the background. Surfing is a great analogy for sleep that, you know, we do all these things to set ourselves up powerfully to surf, you know, so we might check out, you know, the conditions and go drive to the spot and blah, blah, blah. We bring out all our stuff. And then, but then you wait for the wave, like you can't force those things, and the same with sleep. So, and that was when I was hitting my head up against a wall, not being able to sleep, was because I was focusing so much on the nights. And while once I got into bed was when I was really, you know, okay, sleep. And so instead we're focusing instead on the days. So if there's one thing to take from this conversation, it's that right when you wake up, one of the most important periods is in the morning, ensuring that very quickly you're getting, a big shot of sunlight, of light, high spectrum, full spectrum light. And the reason for that is not just like a nice morning ritual. It's because that actually sets a powerful cue for our body that actually within about 16 hours after your largest hit of light, then you can expect to get tired later on. So you can use it really strategically. And so if you're looking to go to bed maybe a bit earlier, then you want to more early, like the earliest you can, really as soon as you get up, get yourself outside and get that sunlight, but not even behind sunglasses or hats or all the things. You want to really be exposed, because we also have photoreceptors on our skin that also are looking to test and to understand what time it is. So this is a really active experience, and that can help normalize hormones. So one, getting as much sunlight as you possibly can. Also, vitamin D is crucial for the cocktail that we create for melatonin later on in the evening, even though it might seem like, how does that connect? It connects. So that, and then the second part is cultivating darkness. So really, you know, if we've been we've been operating as a kind of dark deprived society, you know, so many of the average homes have, you know, lots of faux light on, and we don't think much of it. Lots of night lights, all that stuff. We want to get rid of all of that, really start stepping into living like Game of Thrones or something and have, you know, kind of candles. But also, you know, if you want to get biohackery, you can do like red lights. If none of those are, if you're not open to that, Himalayan salt lamps or lighter forms, or if you're still a total no for that, things like Edison bulbs, all of those are going to be more on the red spectrum, higher on the red spectrum. And then getting even blue blockers can help make a difference, ideally, but not the clear ones. They have to be either amber or red.
Blue blockers, like the glasses.
Yes, the glasses. Yep. Now, so that can help. Yep. Go ahead.
Would you say, okay, so I mean, culturally-wise, our culture definitely, you know, end of the day, everything goes, like I can even think about my wife and I, our kids get finally in bed, we put them to bed, and we'll watch a Netflix, you know, which I know is like, it's probably like the worst time to probably do so. Are you encouraging like, you know, having the glasses when you do stuff like that, show-wise and that kind of stuff in the evening?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, of course, all of this stuff again is a spectrum too. So of course you could say, well, ideal would be kind of a digital sunset. So once the sun sets, you know, all electronics go away, blah, blah, blah. But we also know that how many people are going to abide by that. So if that is the case, then we want to set up the parameters and just take a little bit of prep work so that we do it once and then it's kind of auto set. So what I mean by that is, for instance, you can do like your phone, like I have it set up. I know this is on the video, so people might not see this, but so turn it red at night. And you can do that with on an Android with the app Twilight, on iPhone. You can kind of just Google it. It will show you how to put red filters on the phone. And then if you're using, if you're someone that's still using the laptops, ideally we're not doing that past sunset. But if you, whatever, find yourself in that situation, Iris is a great resource for that. So Iris is, it will go red on your laptop as well. All the while, if you got the Netflix situation, then one, you know, just kind of being mindful of what brain state this is going to put us in. Is it really stressful thing? But yeah, if it's, you know, something that's really going to support us in that kind of wind down process and help us calm, great. And wear, you know, those blue blockers, because that can help eliminate some of the stimulation that comes from all that light.
Yeah. So you share, I know on your site, kind of, it's called like the optimized bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, and in that you were kind of, some of this you were sharing and had that, what are some of those other things that in the optimized bedroom, as far as like this, making your bedroom the best sleeping environment? And I know you were just kind of talking through some of that, but continue with some more of those like things that we could do.
Sure.
As far as our room setup goes even.
Yeah, there's lots from both a low tech and high tech perspective. So one, you can have the infrared light. So kind of the help of, if you look at sunrise and sunset, it tends to have that pinky hue, and that's just naturally infrared light. And so it's more of a healing light, you know, to the point, like I have psoriasis and my doctor might actually give me a prescription to sit myself in front of a red light. Like this is actual medical thing. And yet it's available, you know, for free outside with sunrise and sunset. But so inside, a lot of the ability to use some of these red light elements can be very helpful in healing, as far as also helping for circadian rhythm optimization. So helping that in the evening. So one, you're looking to have your bedroom as dim as humanly possible. So just go around, you know, putting kind of electrical tape over any of the glowing things, you know, like I happen to be in Vegas right now and heading back to New York, both very twinkly, sparkly places.
So you got to put tape everywhere.
You don't want it to look like that in your space. So putting the tape everywhere. And all of these things, we're looking to do this once, and then it's kind of set up and we don't have to think about it. So it might occur as a lot. But in the beginning, then really the big thing is to kind of almost thinking of a hotel and how you can get total blackout. We want that. And we want it to be cool, really, really cool. That seems to be a hard sell for me, for a lot of people. They'll be like, oh yeah, I sleep cool. And then you ask what the temperature is and then it's like 73 or what have you. So we really want to get it cooler than that. So we want to ideally be somewhere in the range of those mid 60s, with maybe 68 being kind of the highest. You can look at, if you all are still also having kind of these results for some of the people, if they are watching and they have, or listening and they've been having difficulty with their sleep and they might be tracking it, some of the, if they're looking to get more of the fine tuned, you know, elements of things, there can be things like air quality that can be challenging. So like I'm in the desert right now and it's very, very dry. So needing to have a lot of kind of humidifiers and to bring that up a bit. And for people that have, you know, allergies, asthma, you know, throat issues, like respiratory issues, all of that can get augmented based on air quality. Then further, for these are some more nuanced things, but can be pervasive. If you have things like mold in your space, that can impact your sleep quality, give you really wonky dreams. You know, some interesting things can come about with difficulties there. But ultimately, we want it to be cool, we want it to be dark, and we want it to be quiet. And so another thing with the quiet part, you know, there might be little things that are micro waking us up throughout the night. So whether it's like a snoring partner, which if they're snoring in your bedroom, you really want to get that figured out, because that can be really detrimental to both the person that's snoring and the partner of the person that's snoring. So, you know, putting things like kind of sound machines, there's like white noise, pink noise, brown noise, but those can help act as kind of like a sound cushion or buffer. And that can really help so that you're not having those micro wake ups.
Yeah, man, there's so much that I love, but I love all of it. Like to me, it's just sleep is just has such a, there's such a value in it, you know, cause we just function so much better as human beings when we get proper sleep, you know. It's just like, we're never going to be able to fully live to the potential that is who we are when we're kind of zombie state.
Yes. You know? Yeah. And when I look back on my, like, I really remember so many times of like, you know, these rare occasions when I would have slept in and I actually felt rested, and it would be like life looks like the colors are brighter. Like, how can I do this all the time? But I thought it was just like a one-off and, you know, well, hope it happens again. Yeah. But really to see that we actually have the power around that. I know we didn't even be able to, there's so much to it. We didn't even get to, you know, really discuss even things like, you know, the conversation around alcohol and what alcohol can do for sleep is crazy. That's probably one of the biggest takeaways I'll see from people that, wear the Oura Ring. And I have most people wearing the Oura Ring, no affiliation with the company, but it's a helpful tool for sleep optimization as of right now. It's kind of one of the most easy ones to go to. And when you see, even just like, we're talking a glass or two of anything alcohol related, yeah. you'll see the difference in your sleep. It is such a, on the first side of things, maybe a downer for people. But once you really get, oh my God, okay, if I make a difference in this area, I can actually feel so markedly yeah. and measurably different. The sleep alone, when it comes to that sort of conversation. And of course, that's a whole area of chronopharmacology, which looks at the different types of drugs, and of course, alcohol being a drug, but caffeine, the impacts that that can have on sleep. And, you know, I'm certainly not saying that you have to go totally straight edge to get great sleep, but it is, if you're looking to further optimize, some of these things can make a profound difference. And of course, the different types of drugs that people might be on at different parts of the day, and even supplements, if not, you know, if they're not the types that are really helping to support you or taking out the wrong parts of the day, can impact that quality too. So it's like a really fun puzzle to unpack and see,
yeah.
you know, and then how you can feel great on the other side of it once you yep. get it all ironed out.
What, so now what is your stance or belief as far as, sleep aids as like medically wise, you know, like is something you go, oh, that's kind of last resort if we have to go there as far as like sleeping pills, those kind of things, or, you know, where do you kind of stand or direct people or guide people in that?
Yeah. Great question. Because right now, for many people that have been struggling with this for a long time, they go to maybe their primary care doctor, and right. That might just be kind of the first thing that they get handed is some sort of, you know, something external to kind of fix a problem that has been pervasive and might have many, many different root causes. So one, it's seems what we want to really think, my opinion on this conversation is that when I think of any of those, one as really a last resort, something really dramatic happened, and it's a short-term approach, right. if at all, because yeah. really what I see for people is like the process of then getting off of some of these drugs can be even more challenging than when they first got on them, because what many of them bring about is rebound insomnia. And so that can be, as someone that went through that, it is not fun. And so, so really trying to avoid that as much as possible and get to what is going on here that is having our body be that riled up. And
yeah. everything else we talked about, doing all of these things to, you know, the. Okay. I got I'm going to ask you two questions. I can ask you questions all day long about this sleep stuff. Okay. Melatonin, natural sleep supplement. What's your belief on that? And then two, I'm going to throw them both at the same time. What's your thoughts on Bluetooth devices, cell phones next to your beds? Does that affect? What is it doing? You know, my wife and I probably go back and forth in an argument on this one back and forth. So I'm curious what your those two things.
Yeah.
Melatonin and devices in your
sure.
room.
Sure. Yeah, for melatonin, there are definitely two camps around this. So the camp I'm in is I just like for us to, one, begin with this behavioral change approach, because I find that, because so many of the things I am talking about are outside of the bell curve, you know, in general. So many of us are just not doing this, and it takes some kind of retraining for us to begin that. But once we do that, often just sleep really can come more easily to the mass for many, many people. So one, addressing that first, and then melatonin is known as the hormone of darkness. So it's known as that because once there's darkness present, that's when the body is one of the biggest, most important signs for the body to know, okay, I can start producing this. This is, let's go time. And so I think one, just really setting up an environment for that first. Secondly, it is a hormone. So I think we've gotten really casual, particularly in America. There's other countries that you can't just go and buy melatonin so casually. Mm. But we've gotten really, you know, just lax about it here. And I think it just behooves us to think twice about that. And just a couple concerns around, could this impact our body's ability to produce this naturally, like any other hormone therapy? So looking at that is in more dramatic situations, a couple of those. One, it can be helpful for jet lag, and also it does tend to get more utilized or kind of offered for people that are, as we're getting older and having a decline in melatonin production. But, you know, so that could be a couple times when we might think about that more.
Right.
But you'll see it even, you go to a drugstore in America and you'll see it for, in the kids, you know, cough syrup.
They have the gummies for kids, just melatonin gummies for kids.
Yeah, exactly. And just, it's an interesting thing because I think we're missing so many of those behaviors that we can do to just simplify this. And then we don't have to think about it and kind of start poor habits from the beginning.
All right. Last question. Devices.
Devices. So, yep. Great. The devices, this is also a controversial topic because there's, you know, different people that are like, oh, it doesn't matter.
I know. EMFs. I like to throw these last couple controversial ones at you. Okay. Come on. What do you got?
Hey, what do you got? I think, you know, one, it's the same way we might, you know, there's a lot that we don't know in this area. And so considering we can unequivocally say that things like our smartphones are stimulating. Like we know they're really designed to be stimulating, even from the light perspective alone. And then just the, you know, the kind of the gamification perspective of people that are making the things that we're on there. It's like a little slot machine. So one, keeping those outside of the bedroom makes a lot of sense just in general. But two, you know, if you are measuring for things like EMFs, I mean, they're absolutely off-putting. And even within the small fine print within some of these, you know, devices, you look in your iPhone and the small print and it's suggested to be, you know, a few inches from the body. So, you know, even the self-proclaimed from the producer, the makers of these are just saying that you need to be wary of the use point of that. So if that's the case, then it absolutely makes sense for us to just come up with kind of a system and certainly keeping them outside of the bed, or at least because proximity is the poison. If you are coming from a perspective around EMFs, then the further the source point is away from you, like a Wi-Fi box, then the better you are. It really drops exponentially from distance. So just getting things at least, you know, around kind of the rule of thumb is like 6 feet away is kind of the current thing, not connected to social distancing, but it just so happens. So socially distanced
everything's six feet now.
We don't know why people throw that number out, but certainly I think just from a habit change perspective, it can help for us to even have defined a space where we kind of put some of our tech away. And, you know, this is actually marketed as a particular offering, which Arianna Huffington had made, I guess, kind of tongue in cheek, but it's actually sold this little bed where you tuck in your phone at night. This is where we're at in life.
Yeah, it is.
You know, but it really seems to be a mental process of like, okay, I'm putting this thing away and sort of, you know, just doing that. And then, of course, for most of us, that Wi-Fi box tends to be one of the highest offenders of the EMF element. So just, you know, it could make sense to, even if we're not totally sold on that story, like, you know, if we can just move it outside of our space where we're not sleeping, you know, we're not using it for those presumably 8 hours.
Even mine has a timer that, you know, at a certain time at night, it shuts down, which forces us to be like, oh, that, you know, it's kind of our shut off time, you know?
It's perfect.
So, well, Molly, I just want to say thank you. I think for the fact that, I mean, I just thank you that you are somebody that has chosen to go take a situation that was a problem in your own life and not only just learn about it for yourself, but learn about it for others and to you educate yourself and go, I want, because I think there's so much value in everything that you just talked about, everything that you have on your business and your site and how you're helping people. Because again, we are never going to be able to fully live into the potential of who we are if we're not sleeping well. And it's just a very simple fact. And so I just want to say thank you for the work that you do with people and the impact that you're having on helping. You're fighting against a culture that, you know, sleep is something that has never been valued recently, you know, and you're helping bring value back into that. And so I'm going to leave you with one last question.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So last question I always ask is, all the media goes quiet, everything shuts down, you know, and it's kind of this just time where you have a voice to the mass, to the world, to say one truth, just one thing that you go, I just want the world to know. What would it be?
Mm. So for me, it would be, despite the fact that I say, you know, the name of this company is Sleep is a Skill, I actually really fully believe that just about everything is a skill. You know, so from that perspective, I found for myself and for others just really being kind of prisoners of whatever we think is fixed. So it might be like, oh, you know, I'm an introverted person. I'm a, you know, shy person. I'm not productive. I'm this, that, and the other. And then if we can shift from this perspective that all of these are accumulation of habits, and that it actually is possible to shift anything that is not working for us. And I think it can be a really empowering place to stand, because when I look at how my life is now versus even like 10 years ago, and I can't even imagine where it will be in the future, you know, just from a perspective of the difference, the smallness or the lack of power that I used to feel when I thought things were fixed and that's just how it was. And then getting to be surrounded by people that actually pulled for something bigger and helped remind me of that there's more and there's possibility in every situation or anything that's not working for us. So I think, you know, remembering that for ourselves can be really, really helpful, and really questioning anything that we think is just the way it is. You know, when we go on and spend all this time on, oh, take a personality test, take a, you know, all of these things to try to understand, well, this is how it is for me. And I think that we can really step beyond that if we're curious and committed enough to make a difference in that area.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Well, again, Molly, thank you so much. People can find you at Sleep is a Skill, correct?
Yep. Yeah. Sleep is a Skill acts as a great kind of bucket of all the things. So on there, there's that optimized PDF. So you can download that for free. And it has 18 strategic tips to kind of transform your bedroom environment. And then that also gets you on our weekly newsletter. So every Monday, if you couldn't tell in this conversation, I'm pretty obsessive personality. It's probably why I couldn't sleep for all those that while. Yeah. And so I call it Molly's Monday Obsessions. And so it's all the things I'm obsessing in the world of sleep and just fun new sleep gadgets, tips, tricks, all that stuff. Yeah. And so
I'm following it now. I'm already on it. I already saw the gadget of the pillow that if you snore, it moves your head around. I'm sold on that already. So
awesome. Awesome. That's great. And then yes, that I actually have those guys on the podcast. So you can also sign up for the Sleep is a Skill podcast. We have online training courses. So if you really want to go in further on optimizing, for every person that we have in the course, we have you hooked up to different sleep tech so that we can kind of create the accountability and behavioral change together from a level of kind of transparency so that we can see exactly where things are and where we want to get to. And then we also have a backlog of kind of issues of different sleep resources on the website there.
That's awesome. I'm going to come work for you guys.
Yes. Come on over.
All right, Molly, thank you so much. I know you got to run. So I just want to again say thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you for having me. And I really appreciate what you're doing in the world and sharing your stories and other people's stories. It makes such a difference, and grateful to be a part of it.
Hey, thank you. Hey, I don't know about you guys, but I know personally on my side of things, that episode just got me thinking. There's a lot of little shifts and change that I can do in my daily routine, daily life to allow sleep to become a better thing. So make sure to go to sleepisaskill.com. Check out Molly's company, what she does to help support people. It is just chock full of amazing information. Be sure to check it out. Thanks. Look forward to talking to you guys next week. Oh, and also make sure to look out for Quick Thought Thursdays. They're quick little episodes sharing just quick little thoughts. They're coming out every Thursday, so keep an eye out for those. All right, bye.